On this Fortnite's episode of Nerd and Ty, we talk about Winter Soldier and how it ties into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s new arc. David S. Goyer says there's no shot for a DC Cinematic Universe. We let Nick talk about Megan Fox. Battlestar Galactica is getting a reboot. Amazon buys Comixology. And No Brand Con is going to kill us all. Welcome to this Fortnite's episode of Nerd and Ty, the only podcast with a dress code that we know of, because someone else might have a dress code, and it might be yellow jumpers. I don't know. Is there an April O'Neil cosplayer podcast? Anyways, I'm one of your hosts, Trey Dorn, joined always with me, I am, they are, the amazing Professor Fur.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
And the contractually obligated Nick Izumi.
I'm here for the money.
And well,
wait, you're getting paid?
You're getting paid?
What?
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Wait. Fur, if I'm not paying him and you're not paying him,
then who's flying the plane?
Hell Hydra.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe is flying the plane. Isn't that right, Nick?
Oh, totally. And the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been delivering once again. And I guess a couple weekends ago, I guess not this weekend that we're recording, but the weekend before, Captain America the Winter Soldier opened.
Oh boy, did it ever.
And so as the show's reigning Captain America fanboy and Ed Brubaker slave extraordinaire, let me be the first to say, boy oh boy, was I eating crow when I went into this movie. After all my public concern about who are the Russo brothers and why isn't there any red on Cap's uniform? This movie was fantastic. Spoilers ahead, everyone.
Well, yeah, seriously.
Because it had the Russo brothers and there wasn't any red on Captain's outfit. That's what made it great. That's why he stopped being Captain Puerto Rico for a while.
No, yeah, this...
Look out for the weekend flag, people. That wasn't racist. That was a flag joke.
It's yeah. Don't write angry hate mail. But no, holy cow, was Winter Soldier good?
So we had a movie that like basically took all of the best elements of Captain America comics from really between 1966 or so and 2000. 2010 to maybe even now, and just crushed it into one movie.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Where do we even begin?
Oh my god.
Well, let's even talk about the opening. I mean, just setting up Cap's life outside of the 40s, him trying to adjust. I mean,
yeah,
that was a good lighthearted way to open it.
There will be spoilers here for you people. If you do not want to know the plot details, to
skip ahead about 15 minutes.
Yeah, whatever. And if we're still talking about it, sorry?
Yeah, skip ahead a little more, maybe? I don't know.
Something, but
there's a 15-second skip thing on your iPhone. Just keep hitting that until Nick stops having a nerdgasm.
Right. But, no, I mean, the beginning of the movie where he's trying to adjust to life in 2013, 2014.
With his fantastic notebook of things that he missed out on. Well, that
notebook was actually customized for different countries.
I saw that. That was weird.
I'm like, wait. This splinters the Marvel Cinematic Universes into so many different realities.
The certain, like, I Love Lucy got replaced with Sherlock in England for some reason.
France winning the World Cup got in the French version, and all I'm going is, why would Captain America be looking that up? He's Captain America, not Captain France. And it's not to say there's anything wrong with the French or any historic soccer victories, but I don't think that a guy from New York is going to be looking up French soccer victories. That's just me.
I'd say uh, I I'm with you, Trey. I am very what you might call anti-Mark Millar Captain America. That, for those who don't know, is the douchebag Captain America who says, "What do you think this A stands for, France?" But yeah, I
well,
just
I'm
don't think
the Mark Millar most things.
Yeah, well, what was great was that actually in the Winter Soldier comic book, Ed Brubaker had regular universe Captain America respond to Ultimate Captain America and basically call him a historically illiterate douche. It was fantastic. But yeah, we got that. Then we get the first action sequence in the movie set up for cool. What to expect in this movie. The action in this movie is brutal as hell.
Yeah, there were some violent, like we're so used to seeing, I think, you know, characters in the Marvel movies, like, you know, we don't see
magic and lasers. Yeah,
magic and lasers, and we don't see a whole lot of, like, violent deaths in a lot of, they're there, but this went just, wow.
Bullets, blades, and blunt objects. That's what. Every fight.
But unlike say, like, the Nolan Batman movies, like, it didn't feel out of place with, like, it... It's doing Grimdark right.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
This was almost... This was, in many ways, and we can get to that maybe later when we talk about some of the themes, but I did a Tumblr post talking about how this movie was kind of the opposite of The Dark Knight, and... You can even see it there that this movie is grim and it's dark, but it's still, you know, fun, and it doesn't need to be taken super seriously at every moment.
Well, it's like Black Widow constantly trying to set up Captain America with different women. Like, that was funny.
Can we also love the fact that we had two protagonists who an attractive man and an attractive woman, and they had a friendship. Like, it wasn't about their sexual tension. It was about
right.
them.
There was a little bit of sexual tension, but
there was a little bit, but it wasn't the driving force of their relationship. And I liked that a lot. Batroc the Leaper is in this opening sequence and he's a badass, which I'm going to be honest with you guys. I actually don't know 1980s Captain America books really all that well.
Well, if you don't know it, we're definitely not going to know it.
And
damn it, Nick.
And I don't know really
for this.
And Batroc isn't really in the modern comics that much, so I was kind of shocked when other Marvel fans were telling me, "Oh, Batroc's kind of a joke." I was shocked to see him as such a badass. Because, like, in the early books from the 60s, 70s, when Batroc first appeared, he was, like, this legitimate badass threat, so... It was awesome seeing him be, like, awesome, like, well, you know,
to be able to go toe-to-toe with Cap.
Mm-hmm, yeah, like, going all parkour on Cap's ass. That was really cool.
Neat.
But yeah, we set up, from that action sequence onward, the momentum never stops. Cap starts having doubts about the U.S. government, S.H.I.E.L.D., I should say, yeah.
Yeah.
So he wants to talk to Fury. We get to check in with Sam Jackson, actually gets a big part in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I'd say actually, and also Black Widow gets a huge part. I think that this is the most we've seen of her in one of these films.
And she gets all the best lines.
It's
really.
This movie was, I mean, primarily a Captain America film, but she played a much bigger part in this than she did in Avengers.
Yeah, this was a great Black Widow.
This was almost as much her movie as it was Cap's. I mean,
no, I agree with that entirely. She's fantastic in the fight scenes. We actually got character development out of her. Found out more about why. We still don't know the specifics of her the red in her papers, but we know that she's trying to make up for it, and we find that she really is sincere about that.
Yeah. I enjoyed them disguising themselves as hipsters and going into an Apple store.
That was great.
How about a personal favorite, as a person who was just in an Apple store earlier today.
Robert Redford had a pretty...
Robert Redswill,
I enjoy.
That's how I thought it was going to go.
This would have been too complicated.
That's the thing, is that in the comics there was an Alexander, except he was Alexander Lucan, who controls the Winter Soldier. the Tesseract so that he can build like a new Soviet Union. And Red Skull ends up entering his mind through the Tesseract after Lucan thinks he's killed Skull, and eventually Skull takes over Lucan's body. But yeah, I think that would have, that works in a comic book setting, but in a movie, it
might have, that would have taken an extra 20 to 30 minutes to set up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, and the Tesseract is already, you know, off on, you know, Asgard.
Right. It just would have confused things.
The Red Skull is secretly trying to take over Bob the Guard on Asgard. And,
Bob the Guard can't be on Asgard because he was already in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was why I think Bob Agent of Hydra appeared in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but we'll get to that later.
Okay, Steve the Guard. Steve the Asgardian. Steve the Guard Asgardian is guarding the Tesseract right now and becoming the Red Skull, and Hydra's going to reform on Asgard, Captain America 3.
The plot has now been given.
I think one of the characters who was fantastic, although I think it was weird that they named the movie after him, because he was really more the C plot. Like, he wasn't really the A or B plot. He was the C plot, was the Winter Soldier himself. I love Sebastian Stan.
Yeah, he's great.
Bucky Barnes is, as I said before, my favorite Marvel character, and the fact that even the flashbacks let us know a little bit more about Bucky and really sympathize with both Steve and Bucky for what happened to him.
I think that the reason why I think the Winter Soldier part is important, because first off, it's a great misdirect to the audience as to what they should be paying attention to, because all the twists play harder because, you know, you're not expecting them. You're expecting this to be a movie about hunting down Bucky.
Right.
And it's always funny to be in the find the people in the audience who were unaware that Bucky was the Winter Soldier. As yes. They react very differently from those of us who were aware.
I was in the back of the theater, so I didn't get as
U.S.
many...
Agent. It was U.S. Agent.
Yeah, of course. That they really handled the stuff with Winter quite well. The other character who I think was a breakout, though, and it's amazing that, I mean, he was only in this movie, and they did such a great job with him, was the Falcon.
Oh, yeah, Falcon was great.
In the comics, Falcon is starts out as a social worker who befriends Cap, but I think having him be a PTSD counselor with the U.S. military, that was a great idea.
Well, it gives you a military background so the character, like, actually fighting becomes believable while still giving him the background very similar to that of the social worker to give him, like, the personality of still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
Anthony Mackie, his performance was just great. He was very charismatic. He was very cool.
That's the thing that Marvel has done so well, too. They find actors that love being their characters.
Mm.
And Anthony Mackie has just been all over the press.
And if they don't like being their characters, they get replaced with Don Cheadle or Mark Ruffalo.
Exactly. But you get Anthony Mackie, who's all over the press tours, just gushing about how much he loves the fact that he's the Falcon.
Yeah, no, and he was great in the role.
One thing I'm really disappointed we didn't see, and I understand for time-wise, I mean, that we would have been there another 20 minutes had they had that in there, but I would have loved to have seen them stealing the suit.
Yeah.
Now, well, they mention where it is, and then they're like, all right, let's go get it, and then he has it in the next scene. It's like, oh.
But the great thing about them them stealing the Falcon pack is that when he describes how heavily it's guarded, Steve and Natasha look at each other like, that's nothing.
Yeah.
So you get the feeling that it wouldn't have been a big problem for them.
Yeah, I don't think we can discuss this movie without also discussing this last week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The entire season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, just the existence of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. itself, really.
Well, because the interesting thing is that, you know, it's S.H.I.E.L.D. is disbanded at the end of the film, and you have to go, oh, what does that do to the television series? The TV series started writing this first season knowing the plot to Winter Soldier. The reason why the show had the random couple of delays in the season in airings was so that these episodes would line up properly. for the episode to line up properly with Winter Soldier's theatrical release.
Mm.
Because we get to find out that the clairvoyant plot is all linked to this Hydra plot from Winter Soldier.
It's unbelievable what Marvel's doing.
Yeah.
The whole conspiracy with having Hydra within S.H.I.E.L.D. was really well done. And really, I mean, even if you saw it coming, it was still really scary when they presented it on screen. Like, yeah. The implications of it. Oh, just good stuff.
Yeah, and although I did actually have to admit, I predicted all of the twists in the episode with who's really a good guy, who's really a bad guy, including Ward. Who did not see the Ward thing coming?
I figured Ward is brainwashed, and I still think he's brainwashed. Because right. He kind of gets out of it when he starts attacking people he shouldn't be.
Yeah, but I kind of saw that, like, it felt like that was what was going to happen.
Hey, before we get too far into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., can I make one more observation about Cap?
No. Yes, you can.
Here's the thing. I really feel like this was also a really solid nail into the argument that too many villains is automatically going to be a problem with a superhero movie. Because, technically speaking, this movie had a lot of villains in it. In fact, four major supervillains from the comics, in addition to Robert Redford.
Yeah.
And I still feel that they were all done justice. They were just used sparingly. Batroc was used for that first scene, and they used him well. Crossbones was in there. They used him as a henchman, which is what he's good at.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier, you can argue whether or not he's a villain, but you get the idea.
Well, Zola,
what a fantastic way of doing him.
Yeah. Well, I'll say that the Winter Soldier was a tool used by the villains in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whether or not you consider a person acting in a way for the bad guys as a villain or not, whether when they don't have complete control of themselves is, you know, up in the air.
Right.
Now, it's what I did like, and then before we jump over to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again, I will say the mid-credits scene finally told us how we're going to get Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch without having mutants.
Yeah, no, they won't have to say the M-word in the Avengers 2. Well,
they can call them mutations because it looks like they've been experimented on with Loki's staff from Avengers that a Hydra faction has, and they are the survivors of the experiments. And so, but they weren't born with a mutation.
Well, there's also a theory that they're also the Inhumans.
That doesn't make any sense with the dialogue, though.
No, it didn't. And the fact that the staff was there, too.
Like, right. They show the staff, they talk about the experiments, and they talk about the survivors, like, of the experiments. So, it's really clear that, you know.
That was a really, both of the post-credit sequences were really good, because that sequence was good on several levels, because, it sets up the Quicksilver Scarlet Witch thing in a clever way that still fits into continuity. Plus, you get the fanboy moment of seeing Baron Strucker looking like Baron Strucker.
Yeah.
And then the post-credit sequence of Bucky in the Smithsonian made me cry. So
I teared up.
Every moment with Bucky was heartbreaking in this movie.
Yeah. Like, well, just, and it's Sebastian Stan's eyes just do that.
Yeah, well, because we didn't get to see his real face, you know, his whole face for most of it. I mean, like.
Which is why he was such a great pick for that part, though, because his eyes express so much more than
a lot of other actors,
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that first moment of you know, where Cap, you know, realizes it's Bucky, and Bucky starts to kind of think and remember things, and it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Sebastian Stan's got some of the most emotional facial features I've seen.
Their final fight, they actually did keep in a lot of the dialogue from the comic, which Raina, you can ask her, verify. I started squeeing in my seat when Bucky screamed, you don't know me, while throwing Cap, because that was straight out of the Ed Brubaker book. Oh, and
That's also when he started listening to The Cure and locked himself in his bedroom, right? Sorry.
Although, one last awesome Easter egg. Ed Brubaker, the writer of the Winter Soldier comic, was totally one of the scientists putting Winter Soldier together.
Yep. Yep. Favorite cameo is still Danny Pudi from Community.
The Russo
brothers, as as the Russo brothers were for the first three seasons, co-executive producers of Community.
Abed, agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Do you think Danny Pudi like asked to be editor? Do you think they're like, hey, Danny, we got something for you?
I think it could go either way.
I'd say both.
Yeah. But okay, so to go with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. then, you know, covered all the like the time frame, like with the end of the previous episode we knew timed in with Fury, you know, car, you know, thing happening, and then this last episode time.
Most intense car chase I've seen in a movie in a long time.
I know.
It was fantastic. Lord.
Right. But so like we know that okay, so Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. greatly like you know showed us where all the other characters all you know between Winter Soldier and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we know where every single high-ranking S.H.I.E.L.D. member was during this crisis, except for Hawkeye. Where the hell was Hawkeye? Where the hell is Agent
Barton? Hanging out in a loft.
Jeremy Renner was very busy feeling bad about being in Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters at the time, so he wasn't available.
I mean, again, you pronounce available as available, and that's hilarious. But it's Jeremy Renner, like, not... Like, I understand that he's an expensive guy, and that obviously Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV series, couldn't afford him. You know, and, you know, there wasn't really room for Hawkeye in the movie. But it just left this, like, you could have, like, thrown in some dialogue somewhere, saying that Barton was secured or something, or, you know, like, anywhere... In both of these, they could have just made one little, like, line to explain where one of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s highest-ranking, most effective agents, a guy who took down a helicarrier with one arrow, who might have been helpful when it came to more helicarriers, I'm just saying.
You know, we didn't even see him as one of the targets for Hydra.
No, I didn't even mention that.
No! It's just gone!
It really does mesh in though. Like it just like the same Hawkeye sort of persona. Like even in the comics, like they're just like, oh, Hawkeye, whatever.
Yeah. Where the hell was Hawkeye? Like that's just all I'm going. Like you couldn't give us Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. showed that out of the three main S.H.I.E.L.D. facilities of the Hub, the Triskelion, and the Academy, they could have made some mention about him like holding down the Academy from the person they talked to. On Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, they could have put him there and made him, like, part of the conflict without ever having mentioned him. Yeah, like, you could have had him there without ever showing us Jeremy Renner.
We even got a Doctor Strange mention in Captain America.
We got a reference. And Hawkeye? Nothing!
I just love that we got an Ant-Man reference in,
Yeah.
And Captain America. Like, that was a nice little throwaway. Mention of yeah. Scott Lang.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, no, I was like, oh, so that's like, I'm, and of course, poor Victoria Hand had to get killed because it's Victoria Hand and she must always die.
Can I say I think my favorite touch of last week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I really think it was a solid episode, really good stuff with the crossover. But my favorite part is at the end of the episode. Before the last, like, end of the episode teaser for the ad break, they always have the comforting S.H.I.E.L.D. logo with Agent Coulson saying, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will return in a moment. And then on this one, it's just the creepy Hydra logo
Yes. And
the creepy voice with, we will return in a moment.
Yeah, screw you for feeling comfortable.
But, I mean, the fact that they've...
Agents of Hydra.
Everyone dies. No one gets out alive.
The fact that this is all tied in like this, and I mean,
sold separately
from a ratings viewpoint, because for people that pay attention to ratings and stuff like that, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has not been doing well in the ratings.
Overall for all networks, for ABC, it's actually doing great.
Right. But I mean, with them showing their absolute expertise of getting to this point and tying in everything together, you have to think that like Disney, which owns ABC. Even if 10 people are watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's going to be on television.
Well, yeah, first, I mean, it's weird that, like, the big tie-in episode was the lowest-rated episode, but you have to remember, not everyone had gone out and seen the movie yet.
And they were probably waiting so they didn't have anything spoiled.
Yeah. I'd say a lot of people I remember even at the Otaku Tonight meeting, we were telling people, if you haven't seen Captain America yet, don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's but likewise, it's still ABC's highest rated show on Tuesday nights, and it's going up against NCIS, the powerhouse on Tuesday nights. A show so popular, even I used to watch it before I got bored with no one ever becoming a better person. Okay, NCIS is the show where you have all these interesting characters who never change.
See, I never pay attention to when that was on because I just don't really watch a whole lot of TV.
It's like the Rockford Files in the sense that, you know, Jim Rockford's never moving out of the trailer. You know? Okay. That was a TV show for you young kids. That was on the television. Jim Rockford was a detective. It was a show called The Rockford Files.
That's my parents' favorite TV show.
My parents own it. It's before my time. I just watched it as a kid in reruns. Okay? So, let's just... before you think I'm that ancient. but it's... Yeah, but that it's a huge ratings house. And so... for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think to do this well against it is kind of amazing.
Yeah, people have been blowing its ratings situation out of proportion, but when you put that in perspective, yeah.
It's doing in the same ballpark as Once Upon a Time, and that's considered to be a hit.
Mm.
So, I mean, you're not really... It's not doing as well as it did when it first launched. I think that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has the problem that the first half of the season was so trying to build its own thing that it really couldn't start slamming in its full ties to the Marvel Cinematic Universe until the second half of the first season.
That's true.
Like, they teased us with a little Thor tie-in at the early on with Thor 2, but I think that was mishandled. They had an opportunity there. But they did the Thor 2 tie-in kind of as a, let's throw that in there.
And it was kind of a crappy tie-in, too, because it's like, oh, well, they're cleaning up after Thor. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it didn't really feel like much of a tie-in other than a whole wink, nudge, look at this, we're in the same universe kind of thing.
But with Captain America, it was fully integrated because they intended from... Well, the reason why is that they knew the twist of Captain America while they were making Avengers.
Mm.
What is that guy's name? Kevin
Feige.
Kevin Feige. Thank you.
Yeah.
Went to Chris, not Hemsworth, other Chris Evans. and said to him, "What would you think if S.H.I.E.L.D. was really Hydra?" And like so they came up with that a long time back. And so that's why this has all been part of the whole prototyping and design of for this to happen at the end of the first season, to get you comfortable with having all these resources and then suddenly nothing. So,
I feel like Kevin Feige deserves a lot more credit than a lot of people give him, considering that he's basically the mastermind behind this entire universe being cohesive.
Mm-hmm. He's a showrunner. It's he's effectively doing what Joss Whedon does for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the whole cinematic universe.
But that's what I'm saying, is like he's a showrunner on a grander scale than most people ever even have imagined before.
I think it's because we're not used to having something like this.
No, this is something we've never seen before.
Yeah, a multi-movie franchise that encompasses a larger universe with two movies a year. Like, we're not talking like it used to be sequels would come out like 3 or 4 years later. Like, you know, like, and then you'd get a second movie in one series, you know, and maybe you'd get three movies in that series.
But that third one is going to suck.
Right. there are too many examples for me to throw in jokes. But it's with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because, and especially since you have such different casts between the different films, you know, where you don't have to worry about making sure that all the Thor cast is available to do your Captain America film. Mm. You know, it's, you can do two movies a year, and by creating this, I think that they really, really, really pulled this off better than you can ever think. And I mean, it's true. We're probably never going to get a second Hulk movie, but it's, amazing that that's the movie that started this whole thing, you know, down by connecting in with Iron Man.
It's true. Yeah, that... Which is it's only a shame because I think Ruffalo could lead a really great Hulk movie.
Well, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, there's been talk of maybe even bringing him in as a TV show.
I
never know. Mark Ruffalo walking away sadly, the television show. I'd watch it.
You wouldn't like me.
I was the only person in the theater who laughed, and I felt really awkward during the Edward Norton Hulk when they had the scene of him walking sadly and that song started playing.
Oh my God, that was so funny.
I laughed so hard. Everyone gave me this dirty look, and I'm like, you know.
I'm glad I watched that at home on DVD because I laughed my ass off.
I saw it in theaters, and I got looks. Like,
it was bad. All these dirty looks are like, what the hell does that guy think is funny? That was hilarious.
I
was also the only person who laughed at Ferrigno as a security guard. So,
oh well, that's and I love the fact that Ferrigno voices the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
In both of those films, that like that's just hilarious to me. That really it means that. Wait, didn't Ferrigno provide the voice in the Ang Lee film also?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
which means Lou Ferrigno is literally the live action Hulk for everything.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing to me.
Wonderful, yeah. But no, we were talking about the interconnectivity that Marvel has put together between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., between their cinematic universe, and how nothing has ever been done like this before. And we're not the only ones that have taken notice of this. On April 9th, David Goyer, the writer, all I have to do is say his name and Nick started laughing.
David Goyer.
The writer for Nolan's Batman series and also the lead writer, quotation marks, for the Superman movie, for Man of Steel, came out and said that, as far as he's aware, Warner Brothers has no plans to make DC Cinematic Universe cohesive in any way.
Wow.
Okay. Good job, guys.
Not only that, but he also said...
why aren't they signing these actors onto multiple films?
Well, you have to wonder that, and he said straight up, this is right out of his mouth. When asked if there's pressure from above to imitate Marvel's cinematic universe, he says, "I mean, yes and no. Look, we've been pretty lucky with the films we've done so far. I think right now it's just kind of more of the same. Please, you have to admire what Marvel's done. It's really hard to create a brand. Pixar's done it, now Marvel has done it. It's hard to do because there's not a lot of brand loyalty anymore."
That is the dumbest excuse for the fact that he's a hack writer I've ever heard in my life.
Well, that, but you have to
David wonder. S. Goyer is a hack.
You have to
the
wonder.
The Dark Knight is an overrated movie.
But you have to wonder with these comments that he's saying that DC isn't really trying to push for anything. If they're throwing
Have they the not help- noticed the money printing machine that Disney has?
But I'm wondering, like, by saying this, if they're saying, like, not only are we not going to do it, we can't do it. Like, is there something that they just can't figure out how to do this that Marvel and Disney have just been able to do from the get-go?
How do I not Batman?
I mean, like...
That's the real question.
I think the big punch to this is there was talk that, that when Batman versus Superman or Man of Steel,
you have to understand,
whatever.
David S. Goyer knows a lot about the Marvel films because he did write the film Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., starring David Hasselhoff.
Oh,
oh.
With the first cinematic incarnation of Baron Strucker. Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah.
But I don't know
Thank
what I was.
You IMDb.
I was going somewhere with that, and
I
forgot.
He also wrote Kickboxer 2, the Road Back. When you're responsible for Kickboxer 2, none of your opinions matter.
No, but Trey, he wrote The Dark Knight, which we all know was inherently the most important superhero movie ever because it's dark and grim, and every other superhero movie has to be compared to it, and if they're not
it's
grim,
the
dark, and depressing...
It's the Kickboxer 2 of Batman movies. The first one was better, and it just got more hype because of a bigger budget.
And then they put out the third one, which was a stinky turd, but because everyone liked the first two, they acted like that was a good movie.
Is there a Kickboxer 3? That's the only way this metaphor works.
Oh, well, no. I was just... I'm just...
No, there might be. I'm gonna look.
I really hate The Dark Knight Rises. Here. You have no idea.
Kickboxer 3. Kickboxer 3 released in 1992. We're good!
It exists.
Okay, all right. Excellent.
It doesn't even have Van Damme in it, but it's good.
It's there. But it's a thing where, I mean, it looks like I know what I was saying. There had been talk that that Man of Steel 2, when that's getting released in 2016, there was talk about, well, Marvel was going to release a movie that same weekend. And it's recently been revealed that it's going to be Captain America 3 that weekend. You have to wonder if DC sees that and just is throwing up their hands and says, you know what, I give up.
Well, I mean, the Russo brothers are even coming back for that one. So, I mean, how can...
Yay.
I don't even know if I feel like we could go wrong with something like that. You know,
why hasn't anyone done an Arrested Development opening for Captain America? They've done it for Thor, but Captain America 2 and 3 are directed by the Russo brothers, who were directors for Arrested Development. Why has this not happened?
Someone will do it. Give it a week. The
this
Arrested
is my challenge
Development.
To you, Nerd and Tie listeners.
The Arrested Development fandom out there will not let that one slip by.
And I'm just trying to keep my quasi-governmental secret organization together.
But anyway, there's nothing more we like here at Nerd and Tie than an exasperated David Goyer saying, you know what, I can't fucking figure it out. I give up.
Does anybody have a picture of David Goyer looking sad?
Let me look this up.
Can we point out that while David Goyer can't figure out how...
What octave did you hit there?
I don't know. I'm magical.
Can I point out that David... Sorry.
I'm in a perpetual state of puberty.
He's smiling in all these pictures, and I even typed in sad David Goyer.
I just want to point out that while David Goyer can't figure out how to do anything that isn't Batman, and even that I'm not so convinced he's that great at, that meanwhile Mark Guggenheim is working on Arrow and making kind of crappy villains like the Clock King seem imposing.
Hey,
the
Clock King is great.
I'm just saying.
Actually, and hey, I've always
animated
said...
series Clock King is great because...
Yes, he is. And so, and
he defeats you with a train schedule.
You know who else is great? Brave and the Bold Clock King, because he has a clock for a face and a German accent.
That's not as cool.
He's awesome.
I mean, I'm not saying he's not cool, but I'm saying he's not as cool.
No, he's not. Animated Series Clock King is awesome because he just has weird spectacles and a brown suit, and he's timed everything, so that just makes him badass.
I've always said that Arrow and hopefully the Flash TV series are proof that like the DC cinematic universe is the blind squirrel finding an acorn every once in a while.
But are those even going to be part of the cinematic universe?
No, like, they're not.
Yeah, exactly. They might have two different Flashes.
Well, yeah, that's the dumb thing. I mean, like, okay, so yes, we're going to have two different Quicksilvers with Days of Future Past, but those are
sense.
Least because Fox is a, you know, just owns the X-Men rights and, you know, and
we'll never give them
holding on to them with their, you know, with their cold dead hands. And that's actually not a reference to the Charles Heston quote. It's because everyone at Fox is in fact dead and clawing for your soul, trying to suck your vital life force from you.
Oh my God. Yeah, I
sorry.
I just don't get it.
Speaking of foxes, though, we're gonna let Nick talk about Megan Fox.
Oh wow, yeah. Good so, segue. In a recent interview, Megan Fox, who you probably all remember from such quality films as Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen and Jennifer's Body, yeah, such great movies right there. But she said in this interview that she would like to see live-action adaptations of Sailor Moon or Gundam Wing. Now, of course, the internet community exploded into how this is the worst idea ever, and Megan Fox is just another one of those fake nerd girls, and why would anyone ever want this?
She's the exact right age to like both of those things.
I was about to say, yeah, I, I guess I don't have a whole lot to say on this one,
and
but
it's
I want to.
It's not like they weren't both on national television.
Exactly. She's from the generation that would have grown up watching Toonami. I know plenty of non-nerd girls who like don't know what I'm talking about, or you know, non-nerd women, I should say. And I mention, oh yeah, Sailor Moon, and they're like, I love Sailor Moon.
Yeah, Sailor Moon is huge, especially with she's in the right age group for that. Also, Gundam Wing was on Cartoon Network,
and it was also huge. It was huge. And it was in the same time slot with Sailor Moon, no less.
The fact is it's Gundam Wing is the Gundam that a lot of people know, even though it has nothing to do with the majority of the Gundam canon, because it's an alternate universe.
Mm-hmm, but it's the one that took off here in the States, because that's what was on TV first.
Yeah, and it was on TV first because it required no, you know, heavy continuity to understand what the hell was going on.
And it wasn't animated in the 70s.
Yeah.
Using pencils and no budget.
Megan Fox has every... I don't doubt her when she says that she wants to do a live-action Gundam Wing movie.
And no one said that she was going to be involved with it. She just said in an interview, hey, I kind of like Sailor Moon and Gundam Wing. That'd be cool to see in live-action.
She didn't say, I'm personally financing these films, bought the rights, and will be starring as both Usagi and Rei.
And, you know, the thing is Megan Fox, I think, could actually be, like, a legitimately good actress.
It's who knows?
Michael Bay has effectively ruined her career, or at least given her a really piss-poor starting spot.
I have no idea if she's a good actress. She's just in terrible movies.
Was Jennifer's body okay? I mean, was she okay in it, I should say, not whether or not the movie was good?
I would never wanted to see that movie.
I never saw it. I didn't either. Because I don't go see horror films that often.
It wasn't a horror movie, though.
Yeah, it was.
She eats people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was...
And it's got that guy from that band in it. Yeah, no, it's this girl goes, like, as, like, to this concert and, like, is let backstage with a band who, like, summons some demon into her and then she ends up killing a bunch of people.
Wow, yeah, I always thought this was a comedy.
No, it's Megan Fox going around eating people, dude.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've just read the Wikipedia description once, but... So that's why I don't know. Was she any good in that?
I don't know. I haven't
Anybody
seen it.
Anybody watch that? Anybody? We all saw it.
Write to us at...
at nerdandtie.trhonline.com and click on the contact form and let us know, was she good in Jennifer's body?
But seriously, internet nerds, stop getting on everyone's case just because you don't think that they hold whatever nerd thing you do in as high esteem as you do.
Also, fuck Gundam Wing. You're not a real Gundam fan if you think that someone liking Gundam Wing is them trying to pretend to be a big Gundam nerd.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
There's plenty of
Gundam Wing fans out there who just enjoyed it from when they were a kid.
And anybody who is allowed to like anything. You don't get to police what people like.
Exactly.
Because guess what? Megan Fox has no need to impress your ass.
Is that right? Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, I mean, like what? Like, Megan Fox's life is somehow better because she would have impressed Steve in his mom's basement. And he might tip his fedora slightly harder at her when she walks by. As he strokes his lush neckbeard and dusts off his Ava figurines, it's...
He doesn't have any of the robots, mind you, just the bikini Oscars and Rays.
Including his My Little Pony character that's looks like an Ava unit.
And writes his Twilight Sparkle fanfic where she's totally his wife. And they bone. No, it's like Megan Fox doesn't want to impress you. She doesn't give two shits about you. She's not a fake geek girl. She's not anything. She's just a person who likes a couple of things.
Plus, if I recall, her involvement in the Transformers movies actually had to do with the fact that she liked Transformers.
And she was aware that she was effectively playing Carly until she was no longer in the series and they cast an actual Carly.
Yeah.
But she knew who the character was. She was at least smart enough to pick up a wiki.
But you know, whatever. If she
she's a little more Beast Wars generation than original series generation.
If she watched Sailor Moon and liked it, whatever. If she calls Usagi Serena, who cares? If she doesn't even know Sailor Moon's real name, who cares?
If anybody complains about someone, an American fan of Sailor Moon, referring to Usagi as Serena, I'm just going to smack anyone who complains about that, because that was the name we got. Someone's allowed to refer to a character by the name referred to them in a licensed version. What's really funny to me is that this is a little more nerdy, is that the people who called the... There's a character... Serial Experiments Lane was an anime series that came out in the late 90s. There's a character in it named Alice, but the subtitlers wrote it as Arisu, not understanding that it was the English name Alice spelled
out.
Even
after the director said that it was a reference to Alice in Wonderland, they still kept the subtitles as Arisu.
But I'm okay with someone accidentally calling that character Arisu and not Alice, because that's what the licensed copy of the thing they bought calls the character.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I even get into that with that happens a lot with Dragon Ball, because no one knows the Japanese names of Dragon Ball characters.
I don't know the American names. It's the pig.
Oolong.
Yeah.
In both versions.
Well, he's the pig.
But
Frankenstein.
But you know what?
Frankenstein. That one's Frankenstein.
Hachan? AKA
Frankenstein.
Not AKA Ader. The English called him Ader, but anyway,
Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, Hachan.
You keep trying to give me these other names when I'm right. It's the pig and Frankenstein. These are their names. I don't care.
But you know what I mean? Like I will call, like, that's one of my problems, that I will sometimes call Dragon Ball characters by the Japanese names just because that's what I'm used to. I'm not an elitist. That's just the name I know. I mean, I know Funimation gave different names to these characters, and if that's what you know them as, I don't have a problem with that. It's
like the guy at the Transformers convention who calls out the Japanese names to Transformers characters.
Right.
Shut up.
his name is Convoy. It's not Optimus Prime. It's Convoy.
That's actually Leo Convoy.
Excuse me.
He's not Optimus Prime. He's Super Fire Convoy, because this is a different character than Optimus Prime.
I'm going to dump both your books.
And it's car robots, not robots in disguise.
I'm jumping to the computer screen right now, and I'm going to throw you both in lockers.
You know, if you have anyone.
But anyways, who is criticizing Megan Fox as having, you know, watched a couple of shows that were on TV, shut up! Shut up!
Pretty much.
You don't have to like her as an actress, but she's a human being who deserves dignity and respect, just like anybody else.
I'm not a fan of anything she's been in, but okay.
I like the first one a lot.
But so I guess even I am overseeing that. But I mean, you know, like, I'm not a Megan Fox fan, but yeah, she has the right to watch cartoons. Damn it! I mean,
so shut up. Go complain about Optimus Prime being a short nose cab again or something. I don't know. I'm waiting for that one. Because of, yeah. Or complain about Grimlock's alternate form being different.
Yeah, complain about Grimlock's horns for a while. That'll make you feel better, you asshole.
Sons of bitches.
Okay, anyway.
Anyways,
what else is stupid going on right now?
Speaking of stupid, you know how just a few years ago, there was this wonderful reboot of Battlestar Galactica that was critically acclaimed.
Caprica! Not
so much Caprica. But the real the actual show called Battlestar Galactica ran from beginning to end, told the whole story, something the original series never managed to do.
In every way than the original series?
Unless you count Galactica 1980, where they did make it to Earth, and it was 1980. And it was awful. well, screw that noise, because Universal is preparing to start work on a Battlestar Galactica movie, which is rebooting it! For no reasonable reason.
And let's keep in mind that the Battlestar Galactica reboot, that the TV series, only came out, it started 10 years ago. I mean, yeah. 2004. That's not...
So it's only been six... I mean, this is like... This is worse than Spider-Man. Because, like, okay, so I thought it was stupid that they rebooted Spider-Man at Sony. You know, because I thought it was dumb because we had, were so recently to a successful franchise that had one bad movie. Like, you know, like, at least all credit to Fox that, like, they had a couple of bad films and then just, like, kept going. And said, we'll make them good again and find, you know, the last year's Wolverine was good and then we're going to hope for the next one here. But...
No, I'm with you. Like, I even liked Amazing Spider-Man. I thought it was dumb that they were rebooting it.
Right, but at least with Amazing Spider-Man, it was a situation where the production... Actually, Amazing Spider-Man came out of the Spider-Man 4 production team. Like, it literally was most of the same people from the previous franchise. And at least it was a situation where, you know, it ended on a down note. Spider-Man 3 wasn't a good movie by anyone's standards. Yet, Battlestar Galactica, like, for, like, there are people who didn't like the ending, but throughout its, like, 4-year run, which only ended 6 years ago, it was critically acclaimed and popular and told the story. And I'm just going, do we need more? Do we need more Space Mormons? Do we?
It goes back to what I've been saying to Mass Effect fans. Like, when they were upset with the ending of Mass Effect 3, it was, okay, even if you didn't like the ending of insert Galactica or Mass Effect in there, even if you didn't like the ending, was the trip that it took you on awesome? Did you enjoy that series?
Well, a lot of the people who didn't like the ending of Battlestar Galactica, the remake, really didn't understand that the part they didn't like was straight out of the original series with the Seraphs. There are literally angels messing with shit in the original Battlestar Galactica.
Like the original Battlestar Galactica, so, yeah.
I like me some Space Mormons. What can I say? I enjoyed the original Galactica. Galactica 1980 is a piece of trash, which is why almost every comic book continuation of Battlestar Galactica has ignored Galactica 1980, along with all the pre-Ron Moore Battlestar Galactica attempts to reboot the franchise ignored Galactica 1980. But I'm just like, why do we need to reboot this?
You know, I have a confession to make. I haven't actually finished watching the 2004 reboot yet.
Oh, well, I didn't spoil too much.
No, don't worry about it. Like, I've heard a couple spoilers. I've owned the whole show on DVD for several years now. But when the ending aired on TV, I was, like, really involved in my studies, so I couldn't keep up with it. And then I kept having to finish, like, my college degree and stuff, so I never got around to watching the DVDs. So I have one more box set to get through, and I will be done with it. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's here. My thought about the Battlestar Galactica is that, you know, the ironic thing is that the only reason why this is a property people are considering adapting into a new film is because of that the 2004 series' success.
Well, like, the original Battlestar Galactica has been a joke for so long, because when it originally aired, it wasn't that big a deal, and then I remember
it hasn't aged Theater well.
Well, yeah.
Well, the parts of it hasn't aged well. Other parts, like, actually, the special effects were really revolutionary for the time, for television. That they were doing special effects on par with Star Wars on a weekly television series.
But the writing was just not there.
Well, no. Okay, the original Battlestar Galactica was, we're the last humans. Oh, here's a planet. Oh, look, it's full of humans. But it's not Earth. Don't worry. Like, that was the thing about that show, is they kept running into more people along the way. We're supposed to be the last of humanity and looking for the last other planet where people are there. And they find it in the first week. I'm like, okay, we're there. We're done. Got it? Or, like
you don't get the great feeling of hopelessness and isolation that you get in the 2004 remake.
The 2004 remake takes the premise of Battlestar Galactica and actually uses it, as opposed to the original series where it was, who can we meet this week? And I'm like, who are you? What? So you lied? You're not the last ragtag remnants of humanity? Humanity's freaking everywhere? There are people on every planet you go to. except for that one that Starbuck crashes on. But every other planet, there are people. You won in the first episode. In the second half of the pilot. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, but you get the idea. Yeah, you had the 2004 remake is just this super dark, really very character-driven and really well-executed show.
That's the one thing about the original series. It's the most cheerful show to start out with a genocide I've ever seen.
That's also true.
What the hell? Why is everyone so happy?
Like, you wouldn't know that these people saw their entire planet burn with just how, like, cheerful and... They're annoyingly cheerful. Like, it's how I imagine the people on the in the third Hitchhiker's Guidebook being before they decide to genocide everybody. They're just annoyingly cheerful.
Yeah. Oh my god.
And so the guy from Bonanza's there.
That's true. Lauren Green.
Indeed.
That show was terrible. Well,
Speaking of green.
Speaking of green, that's right, because their logo is sort of greenish. No, because
they bought something.
No, because they
Bought money. Okay, that too. Amazon bought Comixology.
Nick caught the reference.
Nick's a better person. The leading online hub for comics, as the article is going to put it, basically an app on which you can go and buy digital prints of comics, and they have pretty much every comic ever on there.
Including the original Key Kiter.
We're just saying.
We're going to get back to that eventually. But Amazon has now purchased Comixology. Not a bad move by Amazon.
Well, Comixology is pretty much the main name in buying comics digitally, and Amazon wants to be the big name in buying everything that's literature of any kind. And it's not really a huge surprise, because while the Nook has really tackled comics and graphic novels well, it's been kind of only so-so on the Kindle. So buying Comixology is a pretty smart thing for them, since Comixology is the biggest name in digital comics, whether people are reading them on a computer or their smartphone or a tablet.
Well, and they're easy to read on there, too. It's like the easiest comic app.
Yeah, well, I, for one, am actually really excited about this, because as a person who does independent comics, Comixology has only recently started accepting, like, comics from independent people, and it's the most arcane system that, like, there's no, like, online management tools, but there are tons of stuff for, like, if you do ever Kindle publishing, Amazon makes all of it really streamlined and simple, so if Amazon can bring that to Comixology for the independent press, I think it's going to be a huge boon to Comixology for, like, original content.
I don't even have like a smart device or anything, but I just read stuff off there on my computer, and yeah, it's been really great.
Well, Comixology
it's a good service.
Yeah, Comixology is how I buy all my comics now.
It's actually one of the friends of the show, so to speak, sent me for my birthday, sent me Comixology gift cards, which I use to pick up the movement tray. So now I can actually give my thoughts on that soon.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know Gail Simone, who listens to our podcast regularly, is very interested in hearing about it, Nick.
Yeah.
Yes. I know she'll love my review.
She's reblogged a couple things from you, Trey.
Yes, she has.
How has she not been on the show yet?
On the show.
Because she's a busy human being, and I don't know how she finds my things that she reblogs.
We should try and get her on the show. See if she'll stop in for 2 minutes.
It's okay. Gail Simone has reblogged the worst art I've ever put on the internet. Like, this is like the worst stuff I ever drew and put online. That's what Gail Simone will reblog. I'm not kidding. I'll put up something beautiful and awesome by my standards, and no one will ever see it. I draw a terrible Red Sonja fighting Elsa and reblogged. Whole world sees it.
That's how it goes to everything. When I actually put, you know, hours into like animated reviews, no one cares. If I review a random episode of Gundam with just audio, everyone loves it. So,
well, I think I think those just work better for you, dude. Because the background stops moving when you stop talking, and it's weird.
Oh man, we're gonna be busy in a couple weeks, aren't we?
Yeah, I was gonna say. Speaking of Nick being weird.
Yeah. speaking of Nick being busy, dear golly.
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, we are all going to be at No Brand Con
here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, literally about 3/4 of a mile from my apartment,
and just down the street from my old apartment.
I've never lived in Eau Claire.
But no, we're all going to be at No Brand Con. It's going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to. We're all going to have a very busy schedule.
Oh man!
Yeah, I'll say most importantly, the one thing that all three of us are doing is Nerd and Tie Live.
Oh yeah!
At 10:30 p.m. on Friday.
Groovy.
In the Mercy Room, which is an 18+ room,
which is an 18+ room. So I'm going to slip a nipple.
Now, yeah, because we can't actually say anything we wouldn't say on the show normally, because it's going to be an episode that gets released to the wild of the internet later that weekend. But we can
do things.
But while I wear pants on every single episode of this show,
you might even see my ankle.
Mm. Ooh,
like I said, I'm going to slip a nipple, make the ratings go up.
And then also, in kind of officially Nerd and Tie, Nick and I will be hosting the cosplay contest on Saturday evening.
And I would be there too, but I'm guest head of No Brand Con this year, so I will be at dinner with our guests, who I'm actually really excited about, because one of the guests this year is going to be doing Whose Line Is It Anime with myself and Nick and a couple other of the Otaku Tonight staffers.
That's at Saturday at 2, isn't it? Main programming?
Yep, Saturday at 2, main programming.
Directly before that, I'm going to be on a panel with... also with Erica Flanagan and Kate Tietrich, who is one of the guests of honor, for webcomics, sort of. No one's told me what the premise of the panel is.
It's called Hot Art.
No one's told me the premise of this panel other than it's webcomic-y. So.
You'll be fine.
Whatever that means.
You'll nail it.
And to continue going out of order, I will point out Friday night immediately before Nerd and Tie Live, Nick's got a panel.
Yeah, I'm going to be, my fiance and I are going to be hosting Fourth Impact. You can, parentheses, not, in parentheses, be serious. We're going to be talking about Evangelion and why not to take it too seriously.
And then if you stay after that, you can talk to Nick until Nerd and Tie Live at 10:30. So, because that panel's at 9 p.m. on Friday?
Yeah, that's at 9 p.m. on Friday. It's a haters panel for lovers.
Okay, and then following that is Nerd and Tie... Live at 10:30, and then immediately following Nerd and Tie Live is the annual showing of Hanzo the Razor, Sword of Justice, hosted by me, which is a No Brand Con tradition.
You don't want to miss it.
From 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. that Friday night, you could spend with Nerd and Tie.
5 hours.
Doesn't that sound awesome?
Five hours of stuff with us.
5 hours of just us.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
In a room. That does not have good ventilation.
Don't pack pants, people. Okay, and then...
And Nick, you're doing a whole bunch of other stuff, aren't you?
I was about to say, I'm doing a zillion other things at this con, because I just can't say no, and I submitted more stuff, because I'm dumb. So, on aside from that, on Saturday, early in the morning, another one that I'm doing with my fiance, that's Raina Innocenti. We're 10 a.m. We're doing Moon Cosmic Power Wake Up. We're going to be talking about Sailor Moon and why it's been such an influential series. And that's going to be in sub-programming. In main programming, Saturday at 4 o'clock p.m., I'm doing a panel called Censoring Sakura. And that is going to be a little analysis of Cardcaptor Sakura and the English adaptation Cardcaptors, and why I feel that that adaptation, to try to make it more child-friendly, might be the most offensive adaptation I've ever seen of an anime. I promised
and
my colleague...
AD Police.
And I love the Bubblegum Crisis universe, but anyway... I'm not doing a Bubblegum Crisis panel. Then, on a totally not magical girl note, after I'm doing that cosplay stuff, at 11 p.m. in the No Mercy Room, I'm going to be doing a panel called Helsing Unabridged, and we're going to be talking about the Akoto Hirano's manga and anime series Hellsing, which is the closest thing you'll ever get to vampire Nazi exploitation anime. And it's terrible. And I still kind of love it. Then, on Sunday, it's all robots. All Sunday for me. At 10 a.m. in main programming. Music of the Stars, a look at Macross. I'll be joined by several panelists, including the great Shameless Otaku, our regular writer in Arkham Eyes, and probably my fiance, Rihanna Innocenti, as we talk about Macross.
Wait. Is it that she'll probably join you, or that she's probably your fiance? Because it's very clear.
She's probably joining. She is for sure my fiance.
Okay,
I can
prove
this.
Just making sure.
Then, at noon, in sub-programming, I am going to be doing my panel, Keek Heider, Pinocchio the Robot. You might find out where he parks his bike there. And
I will pay someone $5 to ask where he parks his motorcycle. Only one person gets paid, though.
And, rounding off the weekend at 2 p.m. on Sunday in sub-programming, because you can't stop the robots, I'm doing the Gundam panel that I have been doing forever. And I mean forever. And that will be with Arkham Eyes and Reyna as well. So that's my overly busy weekend.
As for myself, not only am I staffing NoBrandCon as the guest head and hotel liaison this year, I'm also managing to be able to do a few things. Along with the Nerd and Tie Live and Whose Line Is It Anime, we are going to be doing Otaku Tonight Productions Presents One Night Stand-Up on Saturday night at 11 p.m.
And Nick, you're doing that too.
Nick is also doing that. So it's a bunch of our staffers from Otaku Tonight Productions doing about 10 minutes of comedy. It's going to be a lot of fun. It is 18 plus. Probably because we swear a lot.
Boobies.
Also, I'm naked while I do it. I don't know. No, I'm not.
I usually don't really.
I will tell you, I was at this show years ago where a friend of mine like had this go to like this variety show in the Twin Cities. It was like an open mic night only for like theatrical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And out of nowhere, like this, like you see people singing, you see people like, you know, put on skits and things like that and sketches. And then suddenly out of nowhere in the middle of this place, this guy takes his clothes all off and he's just completely naked on stage. No warning, nothing. There are minors in the audience, just random naked dude. But I felt better about myself.
No, I usually don't curse that much during my set, but I'm also opening, so.
Yeah, you get the open this time.
Oh, yeah.
Should be good.
Keep telling people that, then they might come.
But, otherwise, I'm just going to be running around behind scenes making sure Eric Stewart, Daryl Gilboa, Katie Tiedrick, and Sam Ardan and Jillian get to where they need to go.
It's exciting. And it's April 25th through 27th.
In Eau Claire, Wisconsin at the Plaza Hotel.
Hotel and Suites. Located just off of Highway 12. Conveniently.
Be there or be dead to me.
And while that place is booked up, the Days Inn across the street is not. And it's a lot cheaper. So yeah, NoBrandCon will be awesome. And if you are a true Nerd and Tie fan who is not broke, you should go. If you are broke, you should volunteer there and get in free. And then sleep on someone's car. Not in their car, just on their car. Find a random car in the parking lot. Lie down on the hood. Take a nap.
If you have trouble transporting yourself there, envision yourself and try to astral project at the convention. It'll be good for you.
Also, learn to fly. Remember, when learning to fly, always try to take off from the ground. Do not jump off a building. Jumping off of buildings is for professionals only.
And also remember that when it comes to flying, it's important to aim yourself at the ground and make sure you miss.
Right, but only do it from a height no higher than 3 feet off the ground.
Just to start.
And remember to directionally move. It is large hand gestures to steer while flying. Both hands to the left, both hands to the right.
Good Lord, can we get to email?
Mailbag!
Oh, I need to stop this from going any further.
Welcome to the mailbag. We got a big mailbag this week from all people who have previously written in. But we're going to start things off with, I got to hear a letter from Langland.
Langland.
Langland. Subject, what's your favorite food? Yeah, I just threw you guys a curveball questions. Sure, it may not be nerdy and there probably is no tie involved. Well, not spelled T-I-E at least. But still tell me your favorite foods, all of you. Fur, what's your favorite food?
My favorite food in the entire world is from a place called Buzzard Billy's Flying Carp Cafe. It is in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I go there every year for my birthday. It is a giant plate of fried alligator, hush puppies, and a pint of Pearl Street Downtown Brown Ale.
All right.
It is the most delicious meal, and if I am ever going to knowingly have a last meal, I want it to be that one.
Nick?
You know, there's a part of me that wants to say there's this very specific sushi that I really like called the Godzilla Roll. That's only served at this sushi restaurant in Stevens Point, and I absolutely love it. But truthfully speaking, I love cheeseburgers. It is the biggest, like, if I were to be completely honest with people, my favorite food in the whole world is just like a plain cheeseburger. It's pretty much the greatest thing ever. And I will always be happy with a nice plain cheeseburger.
All right.
Trey, what do you got?
Well, there is a restaurant in a town called Sugar Camp, Wisconsin, about a half hour out of Rhinelander, called the White Stag. The sign on the door says if you have a reservation, you're at the wrong restaurant. As you go into the room... Really? I love the White Stag. Anyways, as you the main dining room, everything there is cooked over an open flame, and there's not really a separate kitchen. The chef actually is making things off of one of the two dining rooms. And what I love is, and their menu has not changed other than occasional price increases since the 1950s, and Kessler Ripchen is it's a beautiful pork chop, which is just perfectly seasoned. They do an amazing Kessler Ripchen, and yeah, that's it. I've been going there every year since I was a kid. My dad went there when he was a kid in the 60s with his dad. It's true that starting in the late 60s, they actually wrote down the menu. If you went prior to that, the waitresses would just have it memorized. But yeah, no. You've been to the White Stag?
Yeah, well, I was, well, you know, I used to work out at the summer camps, right?
Yeah, because there's a summer camp near there, isn't there?
Yeah, when I went training to be a program director for Boy Scout summer camps, I went to train at the same place where Vink used to work, which was also my childhood summer camp. Yeah, to SOMAS. I think Vink was...
Yeah.
I think Vink was one of my counselors, actually.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's our food recommendation.
White Stag? Okay, I'll be checking that out in... I'll be checking that out in July, I think.
You're going to be up in the Northwoods in July?
Yeah, my girlfriend's family lives up there, and the plan is to go up there for the 4th.
Oh, where does she live?
Rhinelander. Well, she lives in Milwaukee, but her family's in Rhinelander.
Oh, really? Where in Rhinelander?
Like I have no idea.
In town or outside of town?
In town.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's... Oh, by the way, while you're there, you should go to the Rhinelander Pub and Cafe. Downtown Rhinelander, get the French dip sandwich. I think they call it the pub special. It's a fantastic sandwich. Get it with the... Get the... provolone, but don't get the onions or else...
I never get it with onions.
Also, whatever you do, make sure you get at least one Doctor Who cosplay picture with a hodag.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's a...
I will have to take my second doctor with me, huh?
There's a zillion hodag statues.
Right, but the best hodag statue is one that's only been there for probably the last 15 years. It's the one out by the tourism center near the Culver's, and it's this big fiberglass hodag.
Neat. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So that's all our favorite foods and favorite places in Rhinelander.
And apparently we've all spent time in Rhinelander, but completely separately.
apparently. Mm. But next letter we've got comes from Wade over at the It's All Right podcast, which if you guys haven't checked it out yet, please do. It's pretty good.
It's all right. It means you haven't checked it out already.
Yeah. What?
Continue.
Anyway, the subject is "Oh, use guys." The message says, "Just thought you might like for someone who has never vomited in a hat to write in and let you know that I'm still enjoying your
vomit
nerdy banter."
Hat Steve doesn't vomit in hats.
No, his hat looks like vomit.
Like vomit.
That's a joke about that one, Wade. It's okay. You don't know Vomit Hat Steve. But I'm still enjoying your nerdy banter. The HTML STD bit on episode 17 was a good workout for my abs. A laughing workout, not a vomiting one, FYI.
I disagree.
He's more fixated on vomit than I am on poop.
Really fixated right? on vomit.
Keep kicking out the jam, sirs. Thank you, Wade. I appreciate that. I really enjoyed the Star Wars tattoo on the taint joke during your stand-up set the other week, by the way.
I did not, but I also wasn't there, so it'd be really weird if I had.
the joke was that he was drunk and got a Star Wars tattoo down there, and it's called the Perennium Falcon.
Anyways.
I giggled. It was good.
Oh. So that's the whole letter?
That's the whole letter. He likes us.
And Langland asks us questions. Langland writes better letters.
Yeah, I'm not used to not questioning.
It was more or less fan mail. That was awesome. Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
If you hate us, we'd like to see your hate mail, especially if you like us. Write to us at nerdandtie.tieratonline.com and click on the contact form.
And it wouldn't be a fortnightly episode without a letter from Arkhamize. What does he have to say this week, Nick?
Yay. From Arkhamize. Subject, TV reviving movies. Hey, nerds and ties. Okay, so TV networks have started an interesting trend where they bring back old movies as TV shows. Tremors, Bates Motel, I think Hannibal is. It is.
Yeah.
With the two newest additions being Fart... True.
Series.
With the two newest additions being Fargo, feel free to make a Youper noise.
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah, Derry. Hey, going up there to Brainerd, eh?
Got Martin Freeman in that.
Yeah, there's a Martin Freeman and a Billy Bob Thornton there.
Glenn Howerton's in it, too, you know, from Always Sunny.
It looks okay there, yeah.
Yeah.
And From Dusk Till Dawn, do you think it's
getting
worthwhile...
A
yeah.
Oh.
Totally. Yeah, that's coming out.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know what I think of that one yet, either.
Oh, okay.
That's do a you weird think this one is... to make a show out of.
Yeah, it's... I mean, even the title kind of implies it's kind of a one-night thing. Well,
anyway.
Do you think it's a worthwhile trend? And in the spirit of AMC's new show, Turn, do you think historical fiction is an oxymoron or a redundancy?
I'll let you finish reading it before I respond.
See you guys at No Brand. P.S. Woo! No longer alone in the Hall of Awesome. Congrats to Zero, or Zero, or however it's pronounced.
Okay, first off, historical fiction is a literary genre that's been called that for a very long time.
Really cool.
And in TV, we often refer to these as period pieces, but it's any fiction that is set in a historical period. So it's not an oxymoron, and it's not... Why would it be a redundancy? Are you saying all history is fiction, Arkhamize?
Hey, I resemble that comment. I'm a historian.
But yeah, so I'm like, that's an Arkhamize needs to take more literature courses question.
He designs video games.
As opposed to the old movies getting TV shows, though.
Tremors was like, that show got canceled like 10 years ago.
Tremors TV show, I forgot that was even a thing.
That's like one of the oldest things in the world, you know. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore got turned into a TV show. Got turned into a comedy.
Well, here's the thing, though.
In the heat of the night?
One of the greatest TV shows of all time was based on a movie that was based on a book. But yeah, MASH.
Yeah.
That was...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Renee Auberjonois is in the original, actually, also. I want to point out, just to bring us to a science fiction angle.
That works. Yeah. I just love MASH.
I don't know.
The original MASH movie was fantastic. My parents showed that to me as a kid, and I didn't understand 90% of it when I was a child. Watching it as an adult made much more sense. And you learned that that catchy theme song's lyrics are "Suicide is painless." And it was written by a 15-year-old.
I'm actually really excited for the Fargo TV series. I don't know. It's got a good cast.
I don't know. My favorite TV series based off a movie is still Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so that's just me.
Yeah, but that was a TV series that was drastically better than the movie it was based on.
I know.
You
know, the writers of Roseanne.
I wasn't that excited about the Fargo TV series until I didn't get excited until the night I saw Winter Soldier, because the theater that I was at.
Yeah, we had it too. Showing a bunch of behind the scenes stuff on it.
Yeah, and it looks really cool and really like fun
I didn't realize it was a thing until I saw Winter Soldier, and it was on the I also saw it in that kind of thing.
See, I watch enough FX and FXX where
I don't have cable.
Where they're running brief little spots, like there's no big trailers or anything for it. It's always just, you know, Billy Bob Thornton's character picking out murder devices at a hardware store.
But the idea of doing a TV show set in the Coen Brothers universe is amazing. Love that idea.
So much you can do with it.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
As for this as a larger trend, it's worked before.
I was going to say, it's been a trend as long as there's been television.
Yeah, the Odd Couple was originally a stage play.
Which was then turned into a movie with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, and then became a TV series. After the success of the film.
There's several examples I can think of. So, yeah, I think it can work.
Yeah.
Should be, yeah.
So, and always, to cap off our letter segment with the mailbag, is the Vomit Hat Steve letter. Vomit Hat Steve is a real person who refuses to write into the show, even though he listens to it.
So, does he actually listen to it?
Yeah.
Oh, he does.
Well, he's told me he listened to it. Whether or not he was lying, I don't know. He knows this is a bit. where I read a section from a random book, and you have to guess what it is for where this Vomit Hat Steve letter comes from in literature. Two people have guessed it, and by guessing it, you included in the Hall of Awesome, which currently includes Arkhamize and Zero. Now, last week's book, nobody guessed. And I, you know, sometimes I've pulled, obscure books that were small print runs, but this was a Pulitzer Prize-winning book. Cavalier and Clay. The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
How dare all of you?
It is a book about the comics industry. My God. It's a fictional book set in the birth of the American comics industry. And all of you nerds are terrible.
And kind of a loosely veiled commentary on what happened to Simon and Schuster.
Yes. Anyway.
Siegel and Schuster. Excuse me. Joe Simon was not involved in that.
Yes, Simon and Schuster.
That would have been a great team. Yeah. I wish that would have happened.
No,
Holy crap.
Simon and Schuster is a very different thing than...
Oh, I'm thinking of comic books only.
Right, I know. Anyways.
I got my history degree because of Captain America.
Because none of you got it, I have decided to pick an obscure book that will be my dedicated book to go to until anybody gets it.
Oh, balls.
Bring it on.
Here we go. In the modern age, it has become harder and harder to manipulate the grand story of history. The more books that get published, the more she has to do to change accepted human historical wisdom. Elrin Lowe still creates the occasional rumor that causes a war or a stock market crash, but nothing like the world-changing lies she used to tell. Recently, however, in the past 200 years, she has found a new form for her storytelling. Fossils. Much of what humans know about Earth's past comes from the fossil record. Ancient plants, dinosaurs, and even our supposed evolutionary ancestors come alive through their unearthed bones. Particularly in the fields of physical anthropology and evolutionary biology, there is great reliance on the fossil record. The unfortunate truth is that most of the fossils these scientists examine with such care were created less than 100 years ago by Elrin Lowe's nanites. If you know, I'll put it, this is not something pretending to be fact. Okay, this is from a this is fictional and presented as fictional.
Oh, thank God. Okay. I was about to say, if this is a real, like, if this is their actual belief, I'm going to go kill someone.
No, please do not believe that this is real. Anyways, if you know where this terrible thing that would is clearly not real came from, write us at nerdandtie.trhonline.com and click on the contact form. Or if you'd like to write us about anything else.
Anything at all.
Anything at all.
What did you have for breakfast yesterday? Tell us.
Ed, please write to us.
Unless it's something gross, I don't want to know what it is.
Anything received before the 25th of April is eligible. Might get read on our live show. In front of a live audience.
Of probably like 15 people.
I don't know. We're late at night. We might get some drunk people from the hotel bar. It'll be great.
God, I hope.
Oh, so, boy. Please, let us know whatever you think, because for some ungodly reason, we're actually interested.
Yeah, tell us.
Unless it's gross, then I'm not interested.
And with that, this draws to a conclusion. This fortnight's episode of Nerd and Tie. I have been Trey Dorn.
I will always be Fur.
And for this moment, I am Nick Izumi.
And have a wonderful evening, morning, day, night, whatever it happens to be in your time zone, locality, and proper dimension.
See you all at No Brand.
Or you're dead to me.
And wear some pants.
Or don't.
Keep on fucking in the free world. Got it.
Wait, that's...